Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Nintendo Wirecast. I am one of your hosts, Amiibo Jason, and once again, I'm here with my main man, a guy who is so far away, but he still seems so close. We have TJ. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing amazing. I noticed that you called it the Wirecast, but I think you meant to say the Ring Fit Cast.
Yeah, it's the Ring Fit Cast. We're totally changing it up. With the occasional discussion of Amiibo.
Yes.
So when are you going to do your Ring Fit Amiibo?
You know, speaking of Ring Fit Amiibo...
Oh, God.
I think that it would not be that crazy to get a tip Echo Fighter of the Wii Fit Trainer.
Yeah.
And come on, Drago for Smash. He would be an amazing fighter to have in that game.
At the bare minimum, I could see him as an assist trophy. At this point, does Nintendo even add new assist trophies when they do the DLC packs?
I don't think so. I could be mistaken in that, but I don't think that there's been a situation where there's been a post-launch assist trophy added.
Yeah, we have a new wave of DLC coming out, and who knows what they're going to do at that point. There's been rumors that Mii costumes might start getting audio tracks by default like we got with Sans, which could be interesting too. So who knows? Maybe we'll get something Ring Fit related in the future.
I did read that amazing article on Nintendo Wire.
About, great site.
Yeah, it is. Speculating about potential new additions to the Smash cast. And I noticed that Drago was absent from that list.
He was. Not my doing. Not my doing. That was not my article. I am getting sick of him to a certain degree. So a quick warning here, folks. Skip ahead about 5 to 7 minutes in the podcast if you're sick of us talking about Ring Fit. But it's a life-changing game, and we're both doing it. I've lost 10 pounds in 30 days doing primarily that.
That is amazing.
And, yeah, we're going to talk about it. So it's the way it is. I'm getting sick of him to a certain degree. I would have liked there to be, I don't know, a bigger variation of bosses. And yes, I know there are certain kind of bosses, like you fight other human players too. But that being said, I wish there was kind of a bigger variety of monsters to fight.
How many times have you fought Drago at this point?
I'm on World 11 right now. So 11 times.
Okay.
I think he's the boss at the end of every one. Exactly
half. I think I'm at 6.
So yeah, I'm getting fatigue with the story to a certain degree. Luckily for me, Ring Fit has so much more than the story mode. If you follow me on Twitter or TJ on Twitter, we've been kind of calling each other out for these kind of challenges where you can do
When Jason first messaged me, he messaged me before he tweeted it, and he said, "Hey, I'm putting a challenge out there. Go ahead and beat me." And I didn't think I unlocked the move that he had used because I didn't come across that exercise at all. And then when I saw your challenge, I saw a number and it didn't really mean anything to me because I had no idea what it was. And then you messaged me again later and you were like, "Hey, go hurry up and go beat me in this exercise."
I thought for sure you were going to beat me like right away.
So you pointed it out to me where it was. I guess it was because I had only ever done the adventure mode. I didn't explore any of the other things. And sure enough, it's the first exercise in the simple category. And I was like, okay, I'll give this a try. And you're basically just pumping your pectoral muscles as fast as you can by pushing the ring in. I couldn't touch your score.
How far are you squeezing in, though?
The minimum amount.
You got to do it the minimum amount.
Once I get to about 70, though, I am feeling that there's a noticeable drop-off in my speed.
Yeah.
Me too. At about 70. But you must be doing it a lot faster, at a much faster clip, because what was yours, 120-something?
132 now is my record.
132? Okay, I thought I was getting close to you. I broke 120.
Yeah.
That was the highest that I've gotten so far is 120.
My body contorts, though. Like, near the end, I'm like moving in different directions, and it looks like I'm ill. It gets you. It does.
You seemed so sure that I was just going to easily be able to take you out, but I have been every day since then. It is a staple of my routine.
You need to start your day with it.
Beat Jason.
I
do. Every single workout begins with, okay, today's the day. I'm going to beat Jason. But I'm still not even close to your caliber.
I tried
your,
to
your
beat
pec
you.
Speed.
So you did the other one. You did the one where you had to hold it in, and you got like 205 or some ridiculous number.
I went until I died. I went until I thought my pecs were going to jump off my body.
So I made it to 180, and I was in the same boat where I was burning. Like, it burned so bad. So the nice thing about this game, for you guys who don't know this, you don't need raw strength to do a lot of this. You need a lot of endurance. I mean, pushing in the ring isn't overtly difficult. I mean, it's the process of doing it over and over and over.
Right. My children do it. Yeah. My children play with it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, my daughter plays around with it a bit too. But that being said, I tried to beat your score again after I got the 180, and I can only get up to about 100 now. Like, that 180 was a fluke. Like, I think it was pure determination, because I wanted to beat you so bad. And I just ignored my body's instincts to stop.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you and I should do these, like, if not daily, then weekly. A new one of these challenges every single time.
I think so, too. And I wish, if you're following the show and you play the game, get in on this. Because it's fun. Like, having this, like, competitive edge with it. Who knows? Like, does it matter? You might feel like you're not that fit, but a certain exercise just might naturally appeal to your skill set. You might be able to, like... Jason crushes me.
I'm going to start throwing down like eShop gift cards, I think, for giveaways once a week for whoever can beat it. But I think at that point they have to take a video, because I could see somebody like on the floor just like pushing it into the carpet or something like that.
That's a good point.
So yeah, I think video is going to have to happen.
You know, I did suffer my first Ring Fit injury.
Okay, I had one too, so I'm going to let you go first.
All right, so you know how... Like, probably the most common technique that you use in the entire game is the ab block.
Oh, my God. I think we had the same injury. I think we had the same injury.
So what I normally do is I press it right below my belly button because I want to feel the pressure on my lower abdominal column. And I angle it slightly. I angle my hand slightly down so that if it does, like, slingshot, it – goes against my forearms and doesn't prevent me from being able to block the enemy. Well, I was getting really towards the end of a workout, and I guess my hands got above the ring and it slingshotted me full on in the man bits that my knees buckled and I almost dropped to the floor. And I had it like the ring touching the ring. Yeah. So it was completely wound up as tight as it could be. And it just full on snapped off. And then yesterday, my wife was in the other room, and I was doing the ab block, and I remembered that I had wanted to tell her that that had happened. So as I'm doing the block, I'm like, hey, Natalie, guess what happened to me yesterday? I, like, wound up this ring, and I slingshot, and before I even finished saying it, my focus had lapsed enough on the ring con that I did it to myself ironically as I was describing to my wife what I did. And same exact thing. The knees buckled. I almost hit the floor. Yep. I sustained the full injury from the character in the game. That art was imitating life. Just like you need to have the endurance to be able to complete a lot of the exercises to defeat the opponents in the game. The opponent in the game hurt me, and I hurt myself in real life. I would say that this is probably not problematic with the game, because it was me lapsing in my form. But it sounds like you had a similar experience.
I did the same thing. I did it about 2 days ago. And the same thing right down there. I was able to recover pretty quickly from it. And the saddest thing is I'm in pain, but my biggest concern is getting hit.
Same.
So it's like I immediately get myself together. I get my composure and I put it right back there and I'm just in immense pain. It was worth it. It was totally worth it, though. I agree that I was getting sloppy. It was a Drago fight, and is that his name? Not Drago. What's it? Dragox?
Yeah, Drago. Yeah.
Okay, so
it's written French. Yeah. So Drago. Like, in the game, they say Drago, but I think it would be like Drago.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was getting sloppy because I was tired. Again, I'm playing on level 30, so are you.
Right.
He gets insane. Especially there is, have you gotten to the point yet where he has those mats that are next to him that heal him?
I have had one encounter where he was getting healed by the mats.
Oh, I hate those mats.
Yeah, that drove
mats.
Me nuts.
Those mats
suck. I hate
suck.
Those mats too. I go after those mats first.
Yeah.
They're my number one target.
So, yeah, I mean, it's it is one heck of a game. I want Nintendo to do more than just this with this. I'd like Nintendo to open up whatever development tools they need to third parties. I'd like to see like a Gold's Gym like workout system with this, not necessarily like an RPG, but just more things to do with the Rincon. I'd like to see a sequel to this. I'd like to see DLC. I've said this since day one. I don't understand why, like, one of the... There should be a secret boss that is the Wii Fit trainer. Like, that should be a secret boss.
Maybe there is.
You never know. It is.
I wasn't sure how much this was going to feel like the spiritual successor to Wii Fit, but it absolutely is. I think it really... And it takes it to the next level, which we talked about.
Yeah.
I like that the game keeps me going back. I haven't missed a day yet.
Yeah, me neither.
This last week, and I did tweet about this for anybody who's following me on Twitter, where I was tired. I was towards the end of a workout, and then I realized I was going to have to take on four champions.
Yeah.
Before getting to four threshold guardians before I got to take on Drago for that particular world, and immediately my mind went to another RPG where I had that experience, which is Pokemon, where you fight the Elite Four, and then you have to take on the champion. And I was already breathing heavy, but I'm like, okay, this is it. Let's try this. Let me see if I can take on all four of these Elite Four, and then I'm going to fight Drago and see if I have it in me. And it was tough.
Yeah.
It pushed me to the limits of my body. It wound up being like a 3-hour marathon workout, which I couldn't do every day, but it was fun to me to see how far I can push my body, and that if this was a real battle, could I do it? Do I have the physical endurance and strength to be able to survive? And it felt very rewarding to be able to come out victorious on the other side. I was fully prepared to lose, and I still think that would have been okay to reach the point of failure. It has happened to me before where I haven't succeeded in a particular enemy encounter in the game, which is fine, because then it gives you the motivation to go back and beat it the next time.
Yeah.
But this one was a really triumphant ending. And at the end of every level, the ring shouts out, "Victory!" At that particular time, me and all my kids at the same time just screamed victory, because it was just...
That's how you do it.
An overwhelmingly momentous occasion.
Yeah, believe it or not, that victory, especially when you beat Drago, it's a longer victory. Like, he screams it. And you really feel good about it after the fact. So I'm glad you're having such a good time with it, too. I'm going to keep going at least for 60 days. My guess is I'm going to continue using this indefinitely. If you're on the fence, it's a really cool tool. Again, I said I lost 10 pounds, but I completely changed the way I eat. I'm doing other workouts, too. So I think I mentioned this on another podcast, but don't go into this expecting you can do 20 minutes of this a day and like reshape everything. There's other things you might need to do, but this is a really good starting place, I think, for anybody.
That's, for sure.
You know, even remotely interested in doing any kind of physical fitness. So once again, Nintendo just knocks it out of the park. I'm sure next week we're going to have even more discussions. I'm guessing I'm going to hit level 100 by next week's podcast.
So, woo!
I'm guessing you're going to hit it too, because you're just...
Not by next week.
You're creeping up on
60.
Me. You're creeping up quick.
Maybe. I played a lot.
And now that I taught you about squeezing it. At least for an hour a day.
So, okay. It's just so I understand this. So when I'm in the running portion...
Yep, when you're running, you just go...
I just keep... And just shooting the little gusts of wind?
Yeah.
Do you vacuum up the coins and stuff?
I do.
As you go?
So I'll do that and then vacuum. Did it? Vacuum.
Here's another thing. Like, when I complete levels, I have anywhere between 60 and 80% completion.
Yeah.
Are there alternate paths? Because I fight every
quests.
Enemy
you that
have I
to
encounter.
Go in the shops. You have to talk to the people.
Oh, so you do multiple runs and the side quests will give you a higher completion percentage on that particular stage.
Yeah, so in every shop, there's like a little list of four people. And you can talk to each one of those people and they might give you a side quest.
Okay, I usually do every side quest that I can do, but I didn't really pay much attention to the correlation to my percentage of completion.
Oh, I'm skipping most of it.
Kind of running through it.
I just want to get through the game. I really want to get through it because I want to keep playing, obviously. I'd like to go back and play this entire game from World 1 with my arsenal that I have right now just to see how different it is. Because there's certain workouts that unlock very late game, that I wish I had since day one. But it's they're weaning you into this stuff, which is good. I mean, yeah. They don't want to throw like these hardcore workouts at you right away.
Okay, one thing I will say, I thought we were trying to get to the end of this, but there's one exercise I cannot make work.
Which one?
The mountain climber.
Oh, yeah, me neither. I lift my knees like, all the way up.
Dude, I'm a pro caliber mountain climber. I've been doing this for over 20 years. It is a staple of Taekwondo conditioning training.
Yeah.
My form on it, I mean, this is not to brag. I feel like I have got this on lock. I can mountain climb. But this game does not approve of my mountain climbing, which is a shame because it's one of the greatest moves in the game.
Yeah.
You can attack five enemies at once, I believe, and it's a decent amount of damage. I did find that I can cheese it if I do like a wall climb instead.
Yeah.
So instead of actually laying, like being in push-up position and pulling my knees up to my chest, if I stand vertically and I do high knees, then it will read it. It's a different exercise. I'm still having to work. I'm still having to pump my legs, but it registers as that. But for some reason, when I'm doing it in the actual proper posture for that particular exercise, it does not read it at all.
The high knees for me don't work almost ever. Anytime I'm like going upstairs, like I am, my knees are going as high as they can go. And it never registers it as.
Oh, see, I love that one. That one's my favorite, and I wish that it was a higher damage because I've had to phase it out. I used to use it as – because it also has a fast recovery.
Yeah.
So I would put it between almost every workout, between every other strength technique. Then I would put that in to have the cardio to mix it up, and I loved it. But now it's not really competitive enough against the enemies, so I had to get rid of it. And I had to change it with mountain climber, but I kind of am still doing the high knees now, so it's okay. The other thing I wish is some of the more difficult upper body exercises are in the early game. So you can't really use them as you start to get later into it.
Because it doesn't do anything.
It's
like the bow. The bow pull was one of my favorite ones because that works both arms so well.
Yes.
And then you get to a point where it's like it does no damage. So that's kind of odd too. I kind of wish you could level up the moves to a certain degree.
That would be cool because even some of the like chest presses that are the first ones that you have, the overhead chest press, and then the I don't know exactly what they call it, but the normal one where you put it on your abs and squeeze it in.
Yeah.
Those moves are difficult for me. And I would like to be able to use them more, but they're worthless in attacking the enemies. So I've had to use other arm moves that are a little bit easier, like the overhead rotation.
Yeah. Well, I know we could keep talking about this, and I'm sure we would if we didn't stop ourselves. We'll be back next week to discuss even more Ring Fit. My goal is to hit level 100 by next week. I typically do four to five levels a day. So
me too.
I figure I can get to 100 with no issue. I'm going on vacation next weekend, though, so I wonder if I'll take it with me. I have to.
Yeah,
I can't miss
you.
A day. So it'll be fun. So before we go into any other topics, I know Pokemon came out today, at least in Japan and Taiwan, it definitely is out. It comes out tomorrow, technically, for us here in the States. So we're going to talk about Pokemon. We're going to talk about Luigi's Mansion. I do want to talk about Amiibo real quick. I did end up picking up all three Amiibo from Japan.
How did you get them so early?
Amazon Japan. So they came out 1 week early.
Did they release earlier?
Yeah, so something tells me they've been available by you for the past week.
No, because Best Buy canceled my pre-order.
I saw that, and I don't know why.
I don't know why either. They said that they couldn't verify my information and that I could call them and figure it out. But the weird thing is I used the exact same process, and I ordered them from the exact same account as the last wave of Amiibo with Snake and Ivysaur. And I did that from Taiwan also, and they went through without a hitch.
Yeah.
I had a relative in America pick them up. And so for some reason this time around, it said I could call them to kind of figure out what the deal was, but I really can't call them because my phone doesn't really work with the States anymore. So I just figured it would be easier to accept the refund and then try to find them out here.
Yeah, I would do that too. I mean, Simon Belmont's going to be the hardest one to get out of this batch. Once again, I still run Amiibo News, so I do a lot with Amiibo News. So people send photos of like stock at their stores. Some stores put them out early, and there's about maybe one Simon Belmont for every three or four Crom.
Which well, that doesn't surprise me. He's got a much longer legacy. He's been around for 30-plus years, whereas the other guys... Or maybe not quite that long, but...
No, but I find that weird. Like, you'd think that there would be four Simon Belmonts for every one of the other amiibo. It's just, it's bizarre how little there is of Simon.
Oh, so you're saying that they're short shipping him versus him just being more popular.
Yeah, they're short shipping him.
Oh.
For sure.
Oh, that's
lame. It's like Snake. So Snake was short shipped too. So I noticed that the third party ones are typically less produced. And part of me feels like the third parties are concerned, like, we don't want our flagship characters, like, all over the store. Like, people right, thinking this character's not popular. Shelves. Yeah.
I see.
So, I don't know.
Okay.
I did want to touch base on the amiibo itself, though. Because Simon Belmont, and I'm going to see if I can grab him off of the amiibo shelf, which is right above me. Ah, there he is. Simon Belmont is possibly, and I don't even know if I want to say possibly, I think he is the best human figure to date. So we're not talking about like a big dinosaur, like I know Bowser's not a dinosaur, but I'm not talking about characters that aren't humanoid. Everything about this character is just perfect. His face is rock solid amazing. Every line, his hair, his muscle tone, I mean, everything about this amiibo is perfect. And I am absolutely in love with this thing. His whip is kind of flexible. It's not, I kind of would have liked if they made like the whip out of what the Guardian, his legs were made out of, like a totally yeah. flexible whip. But his whip is semi-flexible. It looks gorgeous. His pose is great. Everything is just rock solid. Amazing. So Nintendo, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you're not. You did a great job with this one. It's just outstanding. And then the other two amiibo are great too, but just not so much as good as this one.
Yeah, that's a hot looking amiibo. That's my Ring Fit body, actually.
Oh yeah, is that right? Yeah.
That's my goal beefy. at the end of the 60 days. That's what I'm aiming for.
If you ever get this beefy, I'd be a bit concerned. Simon is a very intimidating fellow as far as his size is concerned. But he's gorgeous. I cannot wait for Richter to come out in January to kind of add, just kind of be his buddy on the amiibo shelf. But
yeah, he needs another whip buddy.
Oh, for sure. So I guess I have to ask this real quick before we move on from Simon. Do you plan on doing any Castlevania customs?
I
feel like because Castlevania is like your jam. So
I love Castlevania. If I were to do one, it would probably be Trevor because he's the character whose game I spent the most time with, I would say, out of the original ones that's not featuring Simon.
Yeah.
I loved Castlevania 4, and I played a ton of Castlevania 1,
sure.
The first one. It was one of the first games that I ever had. So when you're a kid and you only have two or three games, you play it. The game punished me, so I had like a love-hate relationship with it. I loved playing it. I loved the characters and the story, but I hated the difficulty level.
Yeah.
It was just so punishingly hard. I couldn't figure out Simon's Quest, the second one, so I didn't really spend a ton of time with that, but I would turn it on in the background just to listen to the amazing music.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the best soundtracks of any NES game I've ever heard. But the third one, which is the only one of those first four that does not feature Simon, features one of his forefathers, Trevor Belmont.
Yeah.
I spent a ton of time with. I loved that game. It's also the first one that introduces Alucard. If you watch the Netflix series, it kind of loosely tells the story of that game.
Yeah.
It sucked me in. And I feel like while it was just as difficult, it offered a little bit more reprieve by letting you try different strategies by combining your Belmont with different helpers.
Yeah.
You could buddy up with one of three different other characters, and if maybe you didn't like going one route, you could try another way. So if I were to customize, I think that would be the one. But at this juncture,
yeah,
I can't say that I really have any plans.
So I feel like we need to talk about at least Amiibo to a certain degree tonight. And one of the reasons why, do you know that we're approaching the 5-year anniversary next week?
That shocks me. I feel like it, I guess it makes sense, but it's gone by so fast.
Yeah, so I think it's November 21st, if I remember correctly, 2014 is when Amiibo first launched alongside Super Smash Brothers on Wii U. And I've said this before on the Nintendo Wiretap, anytime we talk about Amiibo, Nintendo didn't quite know what they were doing when it came to sculpting certain Amiibo right off the bat. I think the biggest kind of one to kind of point out right off the bat was like Marth. So the Marth Amiibo was notoriously bad. So his face looked comically bad. His sword was comically bent pretty much all the time. But as it kind of progressed over the years, it got better and better and better. And now that we're here 5 years later, and like I said with Simon, the same thing with Crom. Crom looks outstanding too. Nintendo is nailing this. Like, we are in like the Renaissance period of Amiibo. And it kind of sucks to a certain degree because we're moving into a direction where Amiibo are less relevant. But Nintendo has their method down so well now. Like, I wish that we could go back and just start over. Like, see what Nintendo would do now.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Although I do think it specifically only applies to your human characters. The first Mario amiibo is still one of the most polished, one of the best-looking amiibo out of all of them. I'd put it in the top five of best-designed, best-looking amiibo. He's got the textured overalls. He has his semi-translucent fireball, and the sculpt of it's top-notch. When you look at some of the other ones, like you said, Marth, but also Link and Zelda from the early wave, their faces are not quite as sharp. Well, Link you can actually directly compare to other Links that have come along later, which just look a lot better. The Twilight Princess is the design that they used for Smash 4, and a Twilight Princess Link amiibo did release, and if you compare the two, there's no comparison. The second Twilight Princess is a much more refined, much sharper, much more detailed face, almost making the first one look, like you said, comical by comparison.
Yeah. It's the detail. Like, even on Princess Peach, the first Princess Peach that came out, the dress could be so much more detailed than it is right now. Even, I think, when you compare Peach to Daisy, the Daisy one that just came out, they nailed that one too. So I really hope that for the 5-year anniversary, that Nintendo didn't forget, that they celebrate it to some degree. They say, listen, we're going to come out with maybe a couple player twos for maybe Mario throughout, like, USA Mario. I know it's probably not going to happen, but I'd like to...
Well, surely they're at least going to recognize the anniversary of the coronation of the royal king of Amiibo.
Oh, yeah. Jason. I highly doubt that, but you never know. I mean, there's rumors a Nintendo Direct is coming next week, but I mean, it's never official until it's official, obviously. So who knows? Maybe during the next Nintendo Direct, Nintendo is going to spend some time discussing my favorite thing ever. But I did just want to point out how amazing all of these amiibo look. And then starting next week, too, TJ, I don't think you know this yet, I'm starting a 5-part series on both YouTube and our website. We have 5 writers, each doing a different part of this series. We're calling it Amiibo Anthology. And we're going to be looking at every year leading up to where we are now. So Amiibo Year 1, Amiibo Year 2, Year 3, Year 4, and Year 5. So I think the video is going to turn out pretty good. I'm putting a lot of time and effort into it, more so than I do for like a lot of other stuff. I typically... Our content, at least my content, this is not your content. My content is typically like breaking news. It's not the kind of stuff where I'm writing elongated scripts and putting a massive amount of time into the editing process. So this is going to be my first kind of major showcase of that. So I guess we'll see how it goes. And who knows? Maybe we'll have to get you to come in on that at some point too.
Anybody should be making this anthology, it's definitely you. You were on the ground floor and have been actively continuing throughout this entire Amiibo process from the beginning. So you have a very good grasp on what would be included in this type of content.
Well, thank you. I'll do my best. I'm going to try to make the Amiibo community proud with this one. I still get butterflies every time like new Amiibo are introduced into my life. So, like I said, I think when Simon first came into the office, I was just blown away by the entire thing. So, here's hoping that Nintendo keeps the Amiibo train a-going. I think the next Nintendo Direct, we should get our first confirmation of DLC Amiibo Fighters. So I'm hoping that happens sooner rather than later. And who knows?
It's got to be soon.
I mean, we could get that 4-pack. We could get that Hero 4-pack that I think everybody
wants. We can't go an episode of the podcast without mentioning the 4-pack until we get confirmation of the 4-pack.
This is going to be a continuous thing on the show from this point going on.
Yes, reoccurring motifs for all of you guys who keep checking in. All
right, so that's our Amiibo segment of the night. Do you want to go on to Pokemon real quick?
Let's talk about Pokemon. Now, this past week, I've seen on Twitter just a tremendous outpouring of hate and criticism and threats related to Pokemon. And I'll say, we talked about this. This might sound a little contradictory because we have discussed Pokemon once in the past. And, and I said that I was leaning towards Shield. And I was never really fully sold on Pokemon Sword or Shield. None of this hate stuff has influenced me in any way. I'm a little bit of a backslidden Pokemon player. I did not play a game since Black and White. And then I bought, which one was it? I bought Moon for my daughter.
Yeah.
And I did not have the interest or the desire to play through it myself. Nothing about the Alolan region really grabbed me. The only thing about Sword and Shield that grabbed me was the name Sword and Shield. And then the more that I saw about it, the less appealed to me. Although I will say, I for what it's worth, I enjoyed Let's Go.
Yeah. From a pure nostalgia factor, I think I loved Let's Go. I think that's about it, though. I mean, it was pure nostalgia. And then
it was fun to me. And because it was so easy to... Catching Pokemon was unforgivably bad. That one aspect of it was a real damper. But every other thing, the quality of life improvements were top-notch.
Yeah.
I really wish that going forward there would be more of that in these Pokemon games. But my problem with Sword and Shield comes less from the developers and more from me. They repeat the formula every single game. And I just feel like that play loop has been too played out for me.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that I don't think there's anything wrong with them rehashing it over and over again because you're constantly reintroducing it to new fans. So for my kids, it might be something that they would enjoy because they haven't actually played through a mainline game.
Yeah.
I got my daughter Moon, but she couldn't read at the time, so it didn't really have much appeal to her to just walk around. Although we did enjoy Let's Go together. If I were to get her Sword or Shield, she would probably play it, but we're backlogged right now. We're inundated with a lot of really awesome games. So I think I've reached the point where they didn't sell me on it. There's not enough compelling reasons to buy Sword or Shield for me.
Yeah.
I know that you bought it.
I did.
I saw you tweeting about it. Have you had a chance to play it yet?
I did. So I picked my starter. There is... From a visual standpoint, I think they did a great job. I think the game itself is worthy of a lot of praise, and I think there's a lot of false information on Twitter and pretty much social media as a whole about how these games look, because I think it looks gorgeous. I sincerely do. I'm in the same boat, though. I always considered Pokemon like baby's first JRPG, and I am just coming off of playing Dragon Quest XI, which was an RPG masterpiece. Everything about that game was just A+. I can't speak any higher of that game than I have already. So coming off of that and into this, obviously they're very different. They're for different audiences. I would say Pokemon is designed for a much wider group of people compared to Dragon Quest. But it's difficult to go back to that kind of slow-moving combat. I think the idea that we're in 2019 and Pokemon is a franchise designed for younger fans, that voice acting is not a just a basic staple of this series at this point. I think that's my biggest gripe, is it feels like a 3DS game. I would have liked to see just some like quality of life improvements. And I think the big thing is I'd like to see voice acting introduced to a certain degree. Something so kids that are younger, I don't have to read every single line of text to them. So I'd say that would be one thing. The combat system is pretty much the same old combat system.
You can tell that we're recording. We're recording at the same time as we did last time. That's my.
Is that your alarm
from school? Soon alarm.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. But yeah, I mean, there's just some basic quality of life things I'd like to see updated in the franchise. It's still fun. I'm still gonna play this with my daughter. I think she's gonna have a fun time with it too. Obviously, the Dexit thing is kind of on a lot of people's minds, but for me, it's not a major deal. Like,
yeah.
I don't care about a majority of the Pokemon. I mean, I do. I mean, I like Squirtle. I like Bulbasaur. I mean, I have to like Bulbasaur. So it's one of these.
I'm really Bulbasaur-y. He's not in the
game. I know. So am I. So am I. But at the same time, too, it's not like it's a deal breaker for me. I don't need that level of Pokemon in one adventure. And if
sure,
if you want that, you're totally within your right to boycott it if that's what you want to do. But I don't necessarily think the hate that this game has gotten is warranted. I do think, though, for a $60 RPG that is based on a series that is worth billions of dollars, it's the most profitable franchise on the planet, I would have liked to see a better debut on home consoles than this.
Yeah.
It's still enjoyable, but I don't know if it's necessarily $60 enjoyable. That's just my two cents on it. It's still a fun game. I'm not boycotting it. I don't hate it in any respect. So don't come at me on Twitter saying I'm like a Dexic guy, because I'm not. But I think there's some major improvements that Game Freak could make going forward.
I get people being disappointed if their favorite Pokemon is not in the game. That doesn't affect me. My two favorite Pokemon were confirmed to be in it fairly early, Gyarados and Charizard.
Yeah.
And even if they were not in it, I wouldn't really care that much, just because that's not really what grabs me about Pokemon, and it never really has been. I did catch this tweet recently. It's from at Dynamo Super, and he wrote, "Congratulations, Pokemon community. You have officially dethroned the Super Smash Bros. Franchise for being the worst Nintendo fandom ever. Give him a hand, folks." And there's a gif of a bunch of different Smash Brothers characters clapping.
Yeah.
And this hit me on two levels. I love Smash Brothers so much, and of course I've been following it very closely, and people being so irate and so entitled and so insistent about wanting certain characters to be in the game,
yeah,
or not wanting certain characters to be in the game, that they harass the developers and the creators and they inundate them with messages to the point where creators and publishers of various companies actually respond to them frustrated about it. That makes me frustrated about it, because I love Smash Brothers. I appreciate it for what it is. I, of course, am very invested in certain characters being in there. I was so thrilled when Simon Belmont got announced for the game.
Yeah.
He's my boy. He's in. I get people wanting their favorite character to be there, but to the extent that some of the stuff has permeated all this negativity,
yeah,
and how far reaching this negativity has come, it has actually negatively impacted my enjoyment of Smash Brothers from a community standpoint,
yeah,
where I still love the game for what it is. It obviously doesn't affect the game itself, but I enjoy the community less. And that is completely mirrored by the behavior of a lot of Pokemon players. And I responded to the tweet, or I retweeted it with something to the effect of, like, the people who love the games have become the worst thing about them.
Yeah.
And that's just such a sad state of affairs to me.
It's a hive mind type thing. I mean, if we had social media back in the day when Ocarina of Time came out, N64 era, this kind of crap would still be happening. I think it's just a matter of, I think people thrive on negativity, and they like the community of negativity, which is, I don't want to get political, and I don't want to get like too worldly here, but I think it's like one of the reasons why some hate groups are so relevant. And I'm not comparing people that don't like Pokemon to hate groups, but you find a group of people who are riled up about something and you can get riled up about it too. And then you start feeding off of that negative energy.
Yeah.
And for any fandom, I think that's going to happen. You're going to get these very loud people that are going to be just spouting off this ridiculous stuff. And the louder they are and the crazier what they say, you're going to get people that are rational that are going to try to say, hey, what are you doing? But they're just drawing more attention to it. So it's kind of like that bully that's like shooting spitballs in class, where the best thing to do is ignore them, but you typically start feeding into it instead.
Right.
So it's just, I hate social media. I mean, most of my life is on social media because Nintendo Wire lives there to a certain degree, alongside, you know, our website and YouTube. And by and large, I love our community, but sometimes I feel like the biggest piece of crap. Like if I post something and let's say there's an error in the article, like some people rip into me like on a personal level.
I know. They're like, have you seen his eyebrows?
Yeah, they are perfect. So it's,
and not to be hypocritical, I've certainly shared my, I don't think people should not express themselves. Yeah. I'm somewhat notoriously critical of Super Mario Odyssey. It just did not resonate with me in the way that other people, it did with other people. I've received a lot of criticism for that, which is fine. I love that people enjoyed the game. I love that people challenged my opinions about it. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with me expressing what didn't appeal to me about it. But what I would not do is be like, you shouldn't like the game. You shouldn't buy the game. You should boycott the game. And let's harass the people who made the game.
Yeah.
Because Mario Odyssey did not fit the mold of what I think a Mario game should be. I've been infamously critical of the Pro Controller. I know you love the Pro Controller. So I would never say, hey, Jason, because I hate the Pro Controller, because it doesn't work for me, because I don't think it's an adequate controller, because I think it's poor quality. Therefore, you and everyone else should not use it.
Yeah.
Let's boycott it. I'll play with the controller I want to play with. You play with the controller you want to play with. I'll play the games that appeal to me, and I'll let everyone else play the games that they want to play. I'm not going to try to convince somebody that something that they enjoy is no longer enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's so counter to what I think the whole point of games are. We have a wide variety of different games to suit a wide variety of different interests. And I don't think that Game Freak, Pokemon Company, Nintendo, whoever it is beyond reproach. If they make a bad game, it's going to get bad reviews and people aren't going to buy it.
Yeah.
The fact is, this game's going to make money. They could release a bad game and it's going to make money. But how many times can you do that? If you continue to develop a reputation of making games that are subpar, eventually it is going to affect the bottom line and people are going to feel like they need to change the way that they're doing it.
Yeah.
I don't have an exact breakdown of the numbers here, but I don't think it's a stretch to say the games are not where the Pokemon Company makes their money. I think they make their money with merchandise, if I had to venture a guess. So maybe it is more important that they hit a certain launch date to coincide with all the other ancillary products that they sell than it is that the game reaches a certain level of quality. That's the reality of the industry. I don't think that means they're beyond criticism, but I do think that it should lend a little bit of perspective to where their priority is. They are a business at the end of the day. If the game would somehow assert itself as the primary focal point, then I think their attention to quality might have to face a few adjustments.
But
we'll see. Reviews are rolling in. They're positive.
People are saying, I mean, people cannot accept the fact that people like this game to the point where they're saying that Game Freak is paying off journalists, which is the most ridiculous like notion that I can think
of. Did you get your check in the mail?
I did. I spent it too. It's so good. Nice. Yeah, I love that Game Freak money. But like I said, I think I enjoy what I've played so far. If you've ever played a Pokemon game, you can expect exactly what you've played in the past. There's nothing in this game that is revolutionary. The Dynamax stuff is cool. Is it revolutionary? No, it's not. Not in my humble opinion. I do like the fact that certain Pokemon are visible on the world map. I like that quite a bit. I think they took a page out of Let's Go and they're running with it. And I'm enjoying it. I'm going to go through it and I'm sure it's going to be fun. I'm going to try to catch them all. And it's exactly what I thought it would be. I don't think it's going to be winning any innovation awards, but at the end of the day, it's Pokemon and it's fun and it's a community driven game. You know, Happily Candied, my beautiful wife, she's picking up Shield. I have Sword. We're going to trade some Pokemon. We're going to have some fun, get the family involved. It's Pokemon. For God's sakes, people, it's Pokemon. Just relax. If you don't want to play it, don't play it. If you do want to play it, I hope you enjoy it. So I'll leave it at that.
Now, while Pokemon might be on the receiving end of some bad press, a company that has been really earning a lot of good grace is Sonic with the Sonic movie redesign. I think it looks fantastic.
Oh, it does. It does. To the point where the conspiracy theorist in me is like, this looks so good that part of me wonders if this is what they had all along and they wanted to get some controversy and buzz going. Dude, and then at the end of the day, I don't think that's the case. But
I tend to give people the benefit of the doubt. And while I certainly think it's within the realm of possibilities that what production company is doing this?
I think it's Paramount.
Paramount. So they might release a little bit of footage just as a means of getting a baseline of people's reactions. This is not an uncommon thing. I was involved in the movie industry for 15 years. I still got a foot in the door. So what you do with a lot of movie projects is you test screen them.
Yeah.
Well in advance of releasing. And a famous example might be Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, the third movie. My wife actually worked on it. And
that is my favorite one, by the way. So I never knew she worked on that. So now I got to gush about that next time I talk to her.
So basically, the story is you take a third movie that now no longer features two of the principal characters that were a staple of the previous two installments. And so they test screen this, and everybody walks out of this test screen and they say, where's Vin Diesel? Where's Vin Diesel? So they pay Vin Diesel $1 million to come in to shoot a 5-minute scene because people, it's that important that there's the takeaway that people want to know where Vin Diesel is. His character is too intrinsic at that point in that series evolution to have him involved. So no audiences ever saw a version of the movie without him there because of the test screening. So maybe now that we have this social media, it's a lot more far-reaching, companies can start intentionally leaking early footage just to kind of get feedback where they're still at a stage where it's possible to be able to make alterations. So while it is certainly possible that this could have been the design that they were going to run with, I don't believe it at all. I think that in the best case scenario, they were just wanting to test screen with a very broad audience, meaning the world, everyone who's tapped into social media. But what my gut is, I totally subscribe to that conspiracy theory. I feel like they knew they needed more time. They released a half-baked, unacceptable version of Sonic to get the publicity, to get people talking, to get people mad. And that way, when they come back with something unbelievable, they already have people's positive attitude. They've already earned all of that goodwill. And they've flipped the script on it, but I do believe that it was manufactured.
it's hard for me, but then I went back and I watched the old one again. I mean, obviously, even if you don't look at Sonic, which is almost impossible to do, I mean, because I don't think I've ever talked to a single person that's seen that and said this is acceptable.
It's nightmare fuel.
Yeah, it's terrifying. But at the same time, too, the dialogue that Sonic said, like the whole meow thing, it's ridiculously bad. And then adding Gangster's Paradise into it it's just kind of like the cherry on the sundae, as it were. Just this ridiculous 90s song that is just corny that they just threw on top of it to make it even worse. So part of me is like, maybe they knew what they were cutting when they cut the trailer, and they said, let's make this trailer as bad as we can and then go from there, and then we'll fix it later based on fan response. But
now, at the risk of self-incrimination, I will admit that when I saw that line, every hero has its genesis.
Yeah.
It totally worked on me. I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I know most people are like, oh, that's so cringe. That's so cheesy. But I'm like, no, that is awesome.
Yeah.
That line totally worked on me.
I was just looking at all of the like the new scenes in the new trailer, and I can't even imagine what it would have looked like with the old Sonic, because they were so animated. Like, even the scene when he's like with the, like, he went to the rubber band ball place and he had all the souvenirs.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so expressive. So I'm curious what it would have looked like with this old design. Even that scene when he's playing baseball, everything is just so, like, there's so much animation involved with this that I can't imagine what it would have looked like with that monstrosity that we had before. But I'm on the fence about
Conspiracy. How far are we from launch?
I think it's coming out in February. Oh, it's February 14th, Valentine's Day.
Okay, so
Happily Candy knows what we're doing on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Some Sonic people
the fastest way to a girl's heart.
Yes.
Some people think that maybe the integration into the scene isn't as good as the previous Sonic, but it's not uncommon for unreleased, unfinished shots to make it into the trailer.
Yeah.
Because they are still working on it, and they're going to be working on it up to the last minute. So some of those things might be ironed out. There's a lot of famous examples from a lot of other movies that are special effects laden.
Yeah.
Where what you see in the trailer is not quite as polished as what's in the premiere. So I think it's only going to get better from here, and they nailed the design.
I think so too.
It was really an incredible compromise between a smooth 16-bit design that evolved into the 3D version of Sonic that we now know, into something that can look not absurd next to real humans.
Yeah. It's hard because I think he looks animated. And you have a crazy bar with how good Pikachu looked in Detective Pikachu. Pikachu is a mouse Pokemon. I mean, it's easier to make a furry mouse Pokemon that's not designed to be like a humanoid, like kind of freaky hedgehog. Like, if you were to see a Pikachu in real life, you wouldn't freak out. If you would see Sonic in real life, you'd probably freak out.
Right. And I think it's the human quality, because when you look at Pikachu or any Pokemon, rather, they're animals. We have animals just like them. They just don't have special abilities, and it's rightfully against the law to make them battle each other.
Yeah.
But but Sonic, because he talks and he is humanoid.
Yeah.
He's a personified hedgehog that looks nothing like a hedgehog and behaves nothing like a hedgehog. So yeah, that would be freaky in real life. But I think that they found the right compromise between respecting the design. Him, he looks like Sonic. Before, it did not look like Sonic.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
Part of me feels like they just wanted to go, like, what would he look like if he was in the real world? So I'm happy they went the route they went. I'm excited to see it now. I really am. I would have seen it no matter what, even if it was the old design. I would have seen it to watch the train wreck the first time. But now it looks like it's going to be a fun movie. I hope that Tails somehow makes an appearance. I want it to be a surprise. Knuckles in there would be kind of neat too. I'm excited for Jim Carrey. I think Jim Carrey coming back to goofball comedy is great. I've always liked him growing up. It's just me being a kid of the 90s, I think. So
it certainly does lend an air of credibility to this film that seemed like such a mismatch when you saw the first one.
Yeah.
Because this is a well-respected comedic actor who has a long-standing legacy of certainly quality comedy films. He's, of course, had his share of flops like any A-lister has had.
Yeah.
But by and large, I think he's a fairly respected movie star. So for him to be taking on a role like this, and then it Tubi just so poorly done didn't match to me.
Yeah.
I would think that the man would be very insistent that every aspect of the production was as thoughtful as his performance.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's a lot better fit now. I'm curious to see. I'm actually curious to know how he got attached to this. Like, was he a fan of Sonic? What did they approach him? Did he approach them? I don't know. I want to know what the story is there. That how did they sell him on this role?
Yeah. I think part of me feels like it was probably tailor-made for him. I can't think of another actor that would do the role justice. I mean, Jim Carrey is such a tremendous character actor.
He is, although not physically like Robotnik in any way.
Except that the last scene of the first trailer, they had him like in the bald cap and everything kind of looked amazing. So it's like a very quick, like 5-second look at what he would look like as crazy Robotnik. So I'm curious to see how they're going to kind of play with that. My guess is that's not going to happen until the end of the movie. So it'd be cool to see if maybe he went back to Sonic's dimension and then the next movie might take place there. Cause I'm sure they're going to make another one if this one does well enough. So
sure.
The same thing with,
I mean, I could see there are other people who I could imagine in that role, but I certainly think Jim Carrey's going to bring his unique brand of humor to it. And I could see like Jack Black being Robotnik.
Oh, I guess I could see that. Yeah.
But he seems like maybe a more obvious choice. But part of that is for me, part of the appeal is the curiosity of what Jim Carrey is going to bring to it.
Yeah. It's going to be good. I'm beyond excited to see it now. So everybody the animators who crunched on this one, obviously they deserve all the credit they can get.
For sure.
Which is why,
assuming that they haven't all along been.
Yeah.
Just
I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but
sure.
I still have some inkling that maybe it's not what it seems. But either way, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a crazy 2020 for sure. We're going to have a bunch of new Smash stuff coming. We have a Sonic movie. I mean, what else? Super Nintendo World is going to be opening up.
Yeah, which I'm only 2 hours away from by plane. So I'm definitely going to be taking my family there. It's going to be awesome.
I'm hoping we can meet up because Happily Candied and I have been discussing flying out there for the kind of grand opening of it. So we're hoping that Nintendo is going to help make that happen to a certain degree. So we'll see. It's going
to
be...
My plan is actually to go maybe 6 months after it opens.
Yeah.
Because it's scheduled to open in the spring, right?
Yeah. So right during the Olympics, which is, it's going to be nuts already.
Yeah. I want to miss the Olympics, which is going to be a lot of tourist traffic.
Yeah.
And I worked at Universal, as you know, for a good long time in Hollywood, California. And I got to be there when a lot of new installations were brought to the park, one of which being Harry Potter, which is enormous. So I watched them build that from nothing to what it is now. And they gradually opened up aspects of the attraction so that they opened enough of it to be able to get people into there for a soft opening. And I have a feeling that Mario might do that too, where when it's open to the public, every feature, every attraction may not be up and running, but they want to still be able to kind of generate some revenue based on it before they've completed construction. Yeah. But I feel like giving them an extra 6 months might open up a little bit more of it. And because I don't imagine it's going to be particularly cost effective for me to make several trips, I want to make the one that I go there be really meaningful. So by giving them a little bit extra time, getting past the touristy Olympic time. So I'm thinking maybe like an October, November-ish kind of thing. I'm going to pull the kids right out of school. So that it's during daytime.
Yeah.
I'm a responsible father.
I want
it to be during daytime, not during a holiday break where there's likely to be a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
That way we can really experience it and maybe do multiple times. I'm not really a theme park guy because I don't like standing around and waiting. That's just not my thing. I would rather be like proactively doing something. So the shorter the lines, the more times we can do that stuff, the better. So I want to be there in the morning on a Monday or a Tuesday on a day where nobody else goes there and just do everything as many times as I possibly can.
Not a bad idea. not a bad idea at all. All right, I think that's going to probably wrap it up for today's episode of the Nintendo Wirecast.
But yeah, I've got to go track down some Amiibo.
Yeah, and I have to go to bed since it's the complete opposite time here than it is there. But before we go, where can we find you, TJ?
Check out all my content here on YouTube, on the Nintendo Wire channel, including some recent Custom Conquest episodes. I've also noticed that 85%, if the YouTube analytics are to be believed, 85% of the people who have watched my Custom Conquest episodes are not subscribed. And we're sitting at like 97,000.
Yeah, we're so close
to that 100,000 that maybe if you like that kind of show, consider helping us out, push us over that threshold to get us into that 100,000 mark. It would be much appreciated. If you want to follow me on other social media, I'm on Twitter at Custom Conquest. Just leave that Pokemon hate out of it. I've had enough of that.
Good luck. And then if you want to find me, my personal Twitter account is @AmiiboJason. Otherwise, I write for NintendoWire.com. You can find us on Twitter @NinWire and, of course, @AmiiboNews. But once again, thank you for dropping by. We're going to be back next week, I'm sure, to talk more Ring Fit. And hopefully a Nintendo Direct might get announced. You never know. But until then, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.